Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Kathy Hart.
Hey, Kathy, this is Brad Swanson. I'm in Maine.
I'm in Florida.
Hey. Probably a little
beautiful.
Cooler up here than it is down there.
I was going to say, beautiful weather here.
Yeah. It actually was a nice day here for this time of year. It's a little warmer than usual. So.
Nice.
Not so bad. Yeah.
I just came back from New Jersey over the weekend.
Hmm.
The weather was, it was beautiful, the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a very nice weekend. Sunday night it rained, but then rained pretty hard into the morning this morning, but cleared up very nicely today.
Yeah, all the way here. What's that?
What do you do for work?
Right now, I am a paralegal for a family lawyer.
Oh, interesting. And how does is this just an interest of yours, the mind connection?
No, I am a transition coach. I am going to help women get from their divorce to their new lives.
Good for you. Now, I work with people in transition as well as a coach, and it can be a variety of different types of transition. Nothing as specific as post-divorce or divorce transition into a new life. But so we have that in common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I chose that niche, obviously, because I've been in the business over 30 years. And my own experiences and my care for women. Women need help. You know?
Well, you have a lot of compassion, and that's an excellent trait as for a coach, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, empathy too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. I'm retiring at the end of the year, and this is what I'm going to do.
You'll retire at the end of this year?
Yeah, I'm going to be retiring, yeah.
Yeah, I did the same sort of scheduled transition into my own coaching practice after 30 years of helping develop small businesses.
Mm.
What I really enjoyed was working with the people. And I didn't want to continue to work on marketing and financial and operational issues. I wanted to work with people in their lives. And I think it's a lot more fun. I really enjoyed the small business work, but I enjoy working with, you know, helping people to discover more about themselves and actualize those aspects or parts of themselves that perhaps for whatever reason they didn't spend enough time with, but are very, very useful as they go through transition. So helping bring out the authentic person.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, I agree with you. So how long have you been coaching?
Well, I've been certified to coach for 11 years. I was employed in community development work with small businesses for about 30 years. But, you know, the coaching skills, anytime you work with people, coaching skills are useful. I started focusing predominantly or exclusively on coaching back in October of, actually it was before that. I had some clients prior to retirement. So I'd say it'll be about 2 years this spring, full time. Mm. I only coach 3 days a week. I have five or six clients. I think one of them is going to take a little time off here. But it's enough. You know, I didn't want to go back to work full time. I wanted to
do
it myself. You know,
exactly.
That's your story, too?
That's exactly my story.
Good for you. Good for you. I found retiring surprisingly, I won't call it challenging because it hasn't been difficult, but, you know, work is such a big chunk of our lives and it's so structured.
Yeah.
To have opportunity to make the decisions you want to or need to for yourself. Especially in a profession like yours, where you've been helping others.
Well, hey guys, my apologies for my lateness. I had bridge line difficulties. Mm-hmm. Let's field any questions, thoughts, comments that you have before we get started. And remember, we're going to add on some time for discussion at the top of the hour. So those of you who can stay, please do. So thoughts, questions, comments at this point before we move into the seminar topic. One at a time now. Was there someone? Go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now. Yes.
Yeah. Love is a state of mind.
This is who?
This is Brad Swanson from Maine.
Brad, hi. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah. So love is a state of mind and has a physical, emotional component. And I just wonder how you think about and coach people around that deep emotional state.
What was the first word you used before state of mind?
Love is.
Oh, love. Okay.
I'm just curious. You know, I mean, so many questions come up around the positive aspects, not necessarily the challenges of coaching people, but, you know, we can get tied up in our positive emotions in the same way that, and maybe blinded by the physical and emotional impact of different states of mind.
Okay, I want to ask you to focus that into a specific question that we can answer in a coaching context.
Okay.
In a single sentence.
Do you work with clients who find that their high emotional states, let's say being in love, are as challenging to coach if that state of mind gets into the way of their progressing with their other goals?
Okay, all right, thank you. If they are in a significant emotional state of love, they don't need me. Now, seriously, I think this is a fundamental aspect of what we do as professional coaches, is to help someone regulate a state of mind to be grounded and centered and make balanced decisions, left and right brain, emotional and intellectual. So often a challenge, without it being the stated focus by the client, is to address how they can get grounded and centered to really consider things from a balanced perspective rather than being in an emotional state, because each emotional state is its own software program, and that's going to determine how you perceive and then how you process things. So we help a client ideally get back into the grounded and centered position of the search engine to be able to have access to all the information and all the states of mind and to be able to make balanced, wise decisions. And sometimes just helping someone get in that state of being grounded and saying, can I get a management of background noise? There's some movement or some happening that's being picked up by your microphone that you're probably not hearing. So if you, unless you're ready to talk, would you do a mute, a star six? So that's often a fundamental aspect of what we're listening for, is how balanced and how regulated someone is. And that's, as we talked about, the first step of resonating empathically with someone of their particular state. And that way, we join them. We get in that circle with that stick figure, the client, to plan and go someplace new together. Now, if someone is into an experience of love, we may want to help them look at that and consider alternatives. Was there a particular challenge that you could say succinctly that drove this question? Brad.
Yeah, thank you. I had to unmute my line. You know, the experience was of a client.
I'm sorry, just for time, can you condense it to a sentence or two so that we can focus and have at least a little discussion before we have to move into our... I'd love to hear the story, but can you focus it?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to. The client was blinded by their emotion, the positive emotion, and it was impacting the rest of their life, their ability to make good decisions for themselves versus the other person they thought they were in love with.
Did they realize that, or was that an observation you made?
It was an observation that we came to together, you know, the
okay.
anecdotes that I was being given led me to ask questions about self-care.
Okay. So what you may think about doing is helping someone in the experience with you to do a brief relaxation exercise or just focus on, in some way, do a one-minute mindfulness meditation to be able to consider in a balanced way both a subjective and objective position. Because when you're in a state, you're locked into one focal length. And what we want to do in coaching is to help someone regulate a state so that they can get grounded and centered and consider a number of things, both subjectively and objectively, but in alliance with us, in a collaboration with us, to look at a situation, to understand it, and then to focus systematically on how they can best proceed, so to create a system. So let's apply. I'm gonna put us on lecture mode, so you guys don't have to worry about this. But this is something. This is not in your outline, but this is something I wanted to respond to, Brad, partly from what you're saying, and from some other questions about wanting to systematically understand and approach change. Transformation, success. So here's a way. I'm going to put us on lecture mode. So jot down any questions and things that you'd like to discuss further at the end. And I'm going to do this before we move into our material, but then kind of move, I hope, seamlessly into it. Okay, I want to present one system. It's kind of a macro system of understanding someone's story, the client's, and then how to go about in an informed way to change or transform that story or create a new one. There are seven steps. The acronym that I use is the roadmap. And I'll tell you what each of those means because they kind of work in sequence, not always in conversation, but in sequence. So the roadmap, this system is a way for us as coaches to understand the algorithms of how someone constructs a story and then how to go about changing it or creating a new one. And remember what we talked about, the concept of story is our metaphor. In fact, Margaret Atwood said it very clearly in Alias Grace. When you're in the middle of a story, it isn't a story at all, but it's the confusion, a dark roaring, a blindness, a wreckage of shattered glass and splintered wood. So this is not the clear, concise way we're talking about it now. So this is just, I'll just briefly go through each of these steps and think about some aspect of your life or some vivid recent experience of a client to think about how this might be, if it would be applicable to do this. First is to recognize the authorship. In other words, we have to own our story, to really recognize that we are creating. This is not just happening to us. It's not that we're the victim. That's another story. But that whatever we think and feel and experience, we're creating each moment. It's not there until we create it. So that means that whatever we're experiencing, we're either creating or accepting. The next step would be to own the story, to take ownership of it, meaning that we seize it and make it our own in a way that we know that we're creating that story so that we can then assess. We want to assess, this is the third step, the ROA, the assess to see what's working and what's not. So we want to help a client look at what they want to keep, what they want to change, what they want to let go, what they want to avoid. So to assess the story in as objective a way as possible in order then to decide what to change, the fourth step, to decide specifically what to do and not do, what to change, and what to create if it's going to be some new aspects. So this is a map. The roadmap is a systematic way of looking at this. So after decide what to change, then to map changes. This is where we, collaboratively with a client, look at what the client will do, what their next steps are. Remember, we talked about the beauty of a map is, you know, where you are, where you're going, how to measure progress along the way, what's detour and distraction, so that you map the changes stepwise. What do you do today? What do you do after? What's next? What do you do this week? And then the next to last step is author those changes, actually bring them about. And this gets to in one application, the last question that we ask perhaps in a coaching session, what will you commit to do before we meet again? So you author those changes, you know, putting everything together to author the changes. Now, the final step is not a step at all, but it's so much a process, but it's crucial because if someone creates change, whether that change will stick, whether they'll revert back to their previous behavior or incorporate that change into a new or revised story will be how they program new identity. This is what we're doing consistently as coaches to help someone program new identity, meaning that whatever changes they're making, it's transforming how and who they see themselves to be. And we're constantly providing collaborative feedback to acknowledge, to reflect, to highlight, to crystallize each step and each aspect of change so that the client then comes to incorporate this process himself or herself so that it becomes a self-function, So this is also part of self-regulation, but in a broader perspective, because once something becomes part of an identity, it's made change permanent. It's the bedrock of who someone is, their purpose, their true north. So this is what makes it come to be part of who they, this is what transforms the sense of self. And this is where our seminar is going to start, because there's a very specific part of the brain that has to do with our sense of self. So if someone makes a change and doesn't incorporate it into their identity, they're going to revert back to what they did before. This is where we help someone develop self-empathy, self-reflection, and the objectivity to recognize their story, to assess it, to create a systematic, stepwise process of change, and keep that story internalized as part of an evolving sense of self. And that process, really, in another perspective, a growth mindset, is something that continues for a lifetime. So someone is, your client is going to develop that self-function so that ultimately they won't need you anymore. This will be your legacy. You have worked yourself out of a job. You've helped that client create an internal cohesiveness, a story of their own that they can self-reflect and develop for a lifetime. Now, you may check in with them. They may get a booster shot. You may hear that there are things neither of you could have predicted. But, you know, in another way of thinking about it, you're going to work with someone for a finite period of time. You will be there for their lives, but your interest will not have that daily or weekly impact, but you may want to meet once a year, once every 6 months, or periodically, or just keep in touch, because you don't have to be there to help someone change anymore, but you can celebrate transformative changes and successes. And sometimes, you know, there will be times with many of your clients, they'll want to check in. They'll want to, you know, something's come up that I just wanted to schedule a session with you to get some objectivity about this. And that's part of this process, that you have helped the transformation of the experience, the identity, the mind and brain functioning of that client, so that they're evolving in their own way, in a new story. So let's talk about what we should be talking about now. This will kind of hang in with the outline a little bit. This is really about updating your operating system, writing new stories. Brain imaging studies have demonstrated where the sense of self resides in the brain, the medial prefrontal cortex. This part of the brain lights up when people self-reflect, when they make assessments and judgments, especially about themselves. Some self-reflection prompts for a client, to prompt their reflection, and for yours as a coach. Listen for the story that the source inside you tells. Tell your story in the way you want it to be in order to actualize it, plan it, map it, tell it, then create it. The roadmap, recognize, own, assess, plan, map, and then you got to put it in action. Whatever you're living or experiencing in any way is a response to the story you're telling. If you want the story to change, you have to change the way you tell the story and live it so that it shifts your feeling and thinking as you're telling it. This means that responses from others are not in this equation of creation. This new telling needs to align with who you are, especially in an evolving way, with your needs and your ideals, so that you have a full, purposeful direction of your energy field going forward. when you practice your authentic story, it activates your full energy and power. All of you is going in the same direction. Needs and ideals align with strategy and story so that all of you is going in the same direction. When this is in process, this is in itself exciting, validating, and self-sustaining. And know that you can keep telling and living a better story no matter how good your story is now. The universe will resonate with and match your story as you live it. Now, let's look just a bit from a coaching perspective at pre-commitment. You remember the story of the Odyssey. Odysseus and his men were sailing home from the Trojan War. He'd been warned about the sirens. Their seductive song leads sailors into distraction, but he wanted to hear it anyhow. So he did two things. He gives his men earplugs, well, they can't hear, and then gives them orders that they tie them to the mast and ignore every plea for release until they're past danger. So this management of desire invents pre-commitment to inoculate himself against his predictable and potentially fatal future desire. Willpower alone, he knew, was not going to be enough. And no one is immune to temptation. So pre-commitment can be especially useful when it comes to bad habits or obvious weaknesses. One example of this, I didn't plan to tell this, and I'll watch the time so we get through our material. One of my clients, a very successful executive, started his own company. He one day began, well, you know, Dave, I have told you a little bit. I've been to four programs, two of them residential, but significant programs to stop smoking, and I've never been able to stop smoking. Can you help me? I said, well, let's look at that. I'm going to call him Art. I said, Art, when you decide to get a cigarette, what do you do? He said, well, I go get. I said, where? He said, from my desk. I said, where? Specifically in your, you know, top left drawer. I said, how do they get there? Well, I buy them. And I happened to know that his office complex and company was on a ranch that was several miles from anywhere. And I then asked him, I said, Art, how will you know when you're committed to stop smoking, when it's time? It hasn't been time yet. How will you know? He said, that's why I'm asking you now, because it is time. And he talked about a medical threat and all the prompts. He said, it's time. I said, okay. Now, when you're ready, and if it's now, that's great, but when you're ready, you will not buy any more cigarettes to put in your desk, and you won't bum a cigarette off of anyone who works with you. Now, I knew that he had about a half pack left, so that could give him some tapering. And he said, well, you know, okay. I said, you said you're committed. He said, I'm committed. I will not buy any cigarettes. With a 7-year follow-up, it was the first time at that time he stopped smoking, and 7 years later, he's no longer smoking. I'll elaborate a bit more about that, but this was a pre-commitment. He didn't buy any more. He didn't bum any. So he quit. They weren't available. So pre-commitment works and enables someone to control their actions or face their own penalty if they decide. So let's look for just briefly at commitment devices. This is a device that we can create ourselves as part of our own story. Think about how if you make a commitment, sometimes it's only one good decision one time that can affect the rest of your life. You decide to set up an automatic withdrawal from your checking account to put into a retirement account the first day of every month. it can make a significant difference for the rest of your life. It's a good decision you only make once. Now, other people counter vulnerability and bolster commitment. Some alcoholics take antabuse. It's a pill that makes... In one study, now let's talk about coaching. In one study, college students were given the option to create their own earlier deadline for 3 papers due by the end of the semester. 75% of them jumped at the chance. Now, think about it. 100% of every student, when they know what's due, they have the option of creating their own schedule rather than waiting for some external deadline. They can create their own story and their own timetable. So these are some things that we can do collaboratively with clients. So let's look at how we can help someone engineer effectiveness in creating this change or this transformation of story. Sometimes someone will get in a thought loop, a negative thought loop, mentally replaying the same thoughts, reviewing the same scenarios again and again. You get in a thought loop with some emotional prompt, and it's like you can't get out of it. Well, if I'd only done this, this is what I should have done. Now, here's a very simple way, and this compresses the roadmap system into 3 basic steps. This is, and we touched on this earlier, but this is self-directed neuroplasticity. And this is for a negative thought loop, negative self-talk. Recognize the negative self-talk, like I can't do this or this is going to be. Recognize that as quickly as possible as an error message from your brain. This is your brain's job description to protect you from doing things. Recognize it as a repetition. It's automatically cued or triggered by some emotion or some event or situation. Recognize it as an error message from your brain. Reframe it, which is our basic tool as coaches, into the opportunity or the challenge now, and then refocus to what's the next step in creating a plan going forward. Recognize, reframe, and refocus. So this is the essential aspects of engineering effective change. Focus specifically on the next step. Let me tell you a quick story. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average, though, 24 miles a day and accomplished the run in 143 days. Now, he was asked in an interview immediately after the race with his challenge with an artificial leg and thousands of miles, how did he do it? He said, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. He shrank the change to the next step. Now, he had a map. He had a plan. He knew the telephone poles ended at the end of the Marathon of Hope, but all he had to do was go to the next telephone pole. To specify, this is in your outline, specify the next step. It's not abstract or global or vague. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. Save some is not a plan. Make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick, a map, to determine where you are, where you're going, and then you can measure progress day by day, hour by hour. 4, make progress measurable, a specific destination with a tangible focus on the next step. 5, make progress visible, small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible, and a celebration of each small victory. We do what we do because how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. With each effective step, each step in that progress, with that map, each step becomes validating. It's rewarding in itself, and it creates the experience of effectiveness, the most basic desire that we have as human beings. So this is, and think of the examples of this. One example of shrinking a task to a tangible next step is Alcoholics Anonymous, one day at a time. This makes it manageable, livable, not abstract, not something big or distant, sometimes even hour by hour. And all you ever have to do is the next right thing. This shrinks the change to immediate steps of effectiveness and the experience of momentum. Now, I stole this from one of my colleagues who was a counselor on my service back in the day when I was a shrink. He worked on the alcohol treatment unit. He said, you know, sometimes you don't always know what the next right thing is, but you can always damn sure know what it's not. So let's look then at choice enhancement. These are some things that come into play as we listen to and work with clients. Immediate tension produces emotional regression. Whenever somebody's in a stress situation, increased tension, then that changes brain chemistry, and there's more adrenaline, more cortisol, that blunts some of the higher cortical emotional and reasoning abilities. So this is one of the reasons that we want to help someone regulate, maybe at the very start of the session. So this is something that we want to pay attention to. As we heard Brad's question began to discuss that, the regulation, the ability of a client to regulate and have their state of mind applicable and fit with the task is very important. So often the first order of business, especially if somebody's upset, is to regulate feelings. So this is something that we want to do with a client to be very attuned to. We want to listen to, are they creating a plan and a strategy where what they're doing fits the state of mind, and are they lumping tasks according to the state of mind required? It takes energy to change a state of mind. So if someone is allowing a phone or a text to interrupt what they're doing, it's triple work. They have to stop the immersion, attend to it, and go back. So wouldn't it be better to help them look at structuring their day to cluster the same activity, similar activities, in a time period? And this is especially important with attention-challenged clients. To learn the optimum state of mind for a particular task, to protect time for an endeavor for a particular state of mind. So this is an important thing that we're listening for and helping a client to construct a framework, a schedule, day by day, week by week, sometimes even hour by hour, that can optimize this. So let's look at one of the things we do in coaching, especially, is choice architecture. This is where we focus. We don't focus on looking at the why or the history or the dynamics or the problems. We focus on the charge architecture of this moment. Now, let's look at an example of choice architecture and how framing can make a difference. There was a study at a local car wash that ran a promotion featuring loyalty cards. Every time a customer bought a car wash, they got a stamp on their card. When they filled up their card with 8 stamps, they got a free wash. Now, another set of customers, same car wash, control group, as much as they could, got a loyalty card in which they needed to collect 10 stamps instead of 8 to get a free car wash. But they were given a head start so that when they received their cards, 2 stamps had already been added. The goal was the same. Each group needed 8 stamps. But the psychology and the motivation was different. For those who had a head start with the 2 stamps, they were already 20% of the way toward a goal. So several months later, 19% of the 8 stamp customers earned a free car wash. 34% of the Head Start group earned a car wash. and this group earned their car wash faster, meaning they were ready to start over and spend more money sooner, so it was more than double. So people are motivated to achieve. This is part of what we're recognizing and collaborating with a client. When they achieve something, we may resonate with that. I hear how good that felt when you did that. I know how long you've been wanting to do that. So, and one of our major tools is framing. As we've talked before, I want to revisit it now from a little bit of a different perspective. How you frame something can change the meaning. Remember, we talked about our brain doesn't know the difference between the activation, whether it's excitement or if it's anxiety. Both register the same way. So how we frame that activation determines how we perceive. We frame it as excitement. We may look for opportunity, or we may look for opportunity and challenge, and then experience it then as excitement. Either way, you're going in the right direction. So how we respond, our perception of an experience and the meaning we attribute to it, is the bridge we create between external and our internal state. And each meaning and each frame is ours to construct. It's not there until you create it. So how you frame an issue makes a great deal of difference. And there are many examples of that, but one simple example, one group of countries in Europe has an option that people can donate their organs unless they check a box that they don't want to. In other words, they have to actively opt out. The rate of organ donation is 95%. Another group of countries has a form where if someone does donate their organs, unless they check the box to donate, they have to opt in other words. The rate of donation, 18%, a fourfold difference. It's more difficult to initiate change, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. It's more difficult to disrupt the status quo, the default mode, and to initiate change. So this is what we're listening for as a part of a formation of an unconscious bias and choices by a client. We're listening for how they're deciding as well as what they're deciding. And to discern meaning, you need a context to surround it. The frame can even determine your state of mind, as I mentioned. So we help clients reframe at times. Somebody has a setback, a disappointment, or crisis. Rather than continuing their focus on the problem or on the upset, we may simply ask, what's the opportunity here? Or what do you learn from that? What's the greatest challenge that you have in moving ahead? Or simply, what else? When they run out of possibility, what else? Now, the reticular activating system at the base of the brain decides what is allowed into consciousness out of the millions of bits of data that stream into the brain. In other words, right now, for example, focus and pay attention to your feet. Wiggle your toes. Move your feet back and forth on the floor. Be aware of the feeling in your feet at this instant. Now, your feet have always been there. This kind of information is always coming into the brain, but out of a sea of stimuli of several million possibilities, you may not pay attention to it. We pay attention to whatever fits our story, the framework we use. For example, part of your story is your identity, including your self-image. If something has something really nice about you, if you don't share that, you may not believe it or it won't register. It can be disavowed, like, well, what are they trying to sell me? So how you reframe, how you reprogram your reticular activating system to let in what you want to achieve is the question. Natural filters include beliefs, self-image, goals. This is what we do in coaching. We perturbate the system. We break the script. We ask a question that is not exactly what the client is thinking about or what's next in the natural sequence of things. And by doing that, we get someone to look at it with us, to consider it. So here's a way to frame this kind of discussion. One of the ways, and this is one of the prototype, those of you who have done training with me have heard me talk about the prototype situations that each of you will, guaranteed, my personal guarantee, experience this with clients in the future. This is one of the prototype situations that you will experience. Where you have direct impact, what you can determine, where you can be effective, is your circle of influence. Somebody cuts you off on the highway, you get mad. Is getting mad going to speed up traffic? No, it's part of your circle of concern. All the things that you can't determine in the world, from immediately at least the ozone level to how your partner responds. So assuming that you need to determine how someone else will respond in order for you to be happy is an absolutely guaranteed assumption of frustration. Your model isn't working. It's not that you can't get somebody to respond, because even when you do, it's not going to last well enough for long enough. So the model isn't working. The model may need to move a point of reference internally to the things you can determine, to let go of all the things you can't determine, and focus your energy on what you can determine. You'll be way more effective, satisfied, and successful. So this also includes the beliefs that we have. If there's a negative belief or a fear-based belief, remember, we get what we focus on. So it's important to focus on what you want so that you can align your energy field to move forward in exactly the ways that you want. Your mind is an energy field and responds to focus. Whether the focus is negative or positive, the response is to the focus. And brain research shows that focusing on problems or negative behaviors reinforces those problems and behaviors, because we get what we focus on. The harder you push people to change, the harder they'll push back. The best mentoring and coaching strategies focus on the present and on the future, on possibilities and solutions rather than problems. This creates new neuronal pathways in the brain and new thinking patterns. So be aware of the things that you do focus on, the things that you don't, the assumptions or beliefs that you have that determine how you proceed. Look at what's working, what's not, be honest in your assessment, and look at how you can create and align your needs and your ideals with your strategies and plans. Now, neuroscientists have found a number of paradoxes. When I presented this information that I'm about to tell you, it was part of a keynote to 600 members of a consortium of nonprofit foundations. I saw a lot of raised eyebrows and open mouths. This paradox is one that is inversely related to the pleasure center of the brain. Remember, we do what we do because we imagine how we're going to feel. We look for pleasure and avoid pain. And that is an important aspect in coaching, because when someone doesn't do something or they procrastinate or they plan and then when it gets time, they don't do it, there's some assumption they're having, usually not so consciously, that they're avoiding pain. But here's an example of the paradox. The pleasure center and the altruism center compete with one another. The part of the brain that mediates social interactions, how we perceive and relate to others, is the posterior superior temporal sulcus, the pleasure center. The part of the brain, the altruism center, lights up when we help others and form bonds. Now, they're very related, but here's the paradox. The pleasure center and the altruism center compete with one another. It's either our pleasure or we help others. One or the other is in control, but never both. When someone does something like nonprofit charity work for altruistic reasons, the altruism center is firing. Then, if money is offered, the altruism shuts off and the pleasure center lights up. Here are a couple of examples of applying this. One large blood center, low on supplies for transfusion, decided to pay people to donate blood. Offering to pay sharply decreased the number of donors by half from day one. What they found that reversed the effect? Letting the donors then contribute the payment to charity, or simply removing payment. Another, when daycare centers in Israel fined parents for late pickups, the number of tardy parents essentially doubled. Well, why would that be? Well, the parents no longer felt ethically obligated to not inconvenience the teachers because they then felt they were paying the teachers for their lateness. Time became a commodity. Studies repeatedly show that a financial reward will undermine altruistic motivation. When the pleasure center hijacks the altruism center, motivation changes dramatically to that of self-interest. Now, here's a final illustration, and then I'm going to do a summary of listening to kind of pull all this together. Final illustration of a roadblock to success. Darren Brown did an experiment in the UK in London on Regent Street, which has a lot of pedestrian traffic. Darren placed his wallet with money clearly sticking out on the sidewalk. Then he drew a circle with yellow chalk around the wallet. You know, sort of like the crime scenes on TV, maybe. Then he walked away, leaving the wallet sitting there inside this yellow circle. Hundreds of people walked past this wallet. Most of them saw it. Some stopped to look at it. Not a single person for hours would pick it up. The yellow chalk circle seemed to be a barrier that people were reluctant to cross. The yellow chalk circle created a barrier, the assumption that limited people simply from picking up the wallet. It created the perception of a belief. Here's the question. Consider it immediately for the first thing that comes to your mind, because that's often the most meaningful. What is your yellow chalk circle? It may be any assumption that limits you. I'll come back in the discussion to mention another question that I'd like you to consider. Now, here's a summary of listening as mentor coaches. As mentor coaches, we become accustomed to listening to a story without trying to fix it. First, put your ego in a blind trust. In other words, don't take it personally. It's not about you. It's not your story. It's not a story that you need to insert how you do it or your best practice, because it's the client's story. Listen to the language, whether it's active or passive. This will tell you how someone regards their own authority and their own active position of creating that story. Listen to the point of reference, whether it's internal or external. This is essentially the essence of what we talked about in the circle of concern, that's the external point of reference, how somebody else or something else will respond. When it's let go and move to an internal point of reference, it becomes a circle of influence, what we can actively do, how we can create effectiveness. Listen to the source of authority, whether it's self or other. This is about point of reference too. Listen for the initiation of action, whether it's proactive or reactive. Is someone reacting to someone else? That's an external point of reference. And we want to help a client move it to an internal point of reference, to become an author of their own story, to use their roadmap that is significant and meaningful to them for whatever the task. Listen for how centered the speaker is in his or her experience. Think about how you hear somebody being interviewed, or maybe you can reflect on hearing a client. Usually we use first person. We're talking about our experience, I or we, if it's plural. If suddenly a client moves to talking about themselves and they say you and referring to themselves, something's going on. They just move from the playing field to the observer's platform. There's something that they may want to distance or disregard, that they move to second person. They're creating a bit of difference between their speaking voice and their experience. So every once in a while when you hear this, it may be helpful. You may consider if it's helpful to point out to a client, you know, you move from speaking about yourself and your experience to refer to yourself as you. And if you do this and it's timed right, they'll pick it up from there and say, you know, I recognize now I'm uncomfortable with that, or, you know, I didn't want to talk about that. I don't want to go there. So that's what we're listening for, the subtleties and how it can make a difference. This is all part of the client is author of their story. We're the catalyst to help them develop a new or revised story. Listen for the state of mind of the speaker and whether the state of mind is regulated and fits the task. And this is important in listening to a client. So here's a summary then of sort of what we've talked about for the four seminars. As mentor coaches, we focus on being a catalyst to help the client develop and co-create with us their story, not about advice or information. If they've got Google, they're good for information. Since old patterns are hardwired, it may take a consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. The first step is to recognize and own the story, the first two steps of the roadmap. Peter Drucker said, the most pressing task is to teach people how to learn. We're doing that not in a teaching way. We're doing that in a coaching way. This is not about training or teaching our client, not about giving them information, but about entering that experience with them and going someplace new together. So here are the common and important elements to catalyze that successful change in our clients. Concentrate on new behaviors rather than problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem, creating new solutions is not going to help. It's going to further etch the pathway. Co-create new ways of thinking to stimulate new brain circuitry and pathways with an eye on the prize, a focus on creating new mental maps to a new destination. Regulate a state of mind to manage emotions, even including excessive love, where we began, to help someone have balanced experience, balanced learning, left and right brain, intellectual and emotional. Facilitate insight rather than give advice. People can always tell when you're trying to nudge them in a direction when you disguise your opinion in the form of, well, have you thought about it? Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. The power is in the focus. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Facilitate new behaviors and guide the development and actualization of new mental maps. Even collaboratively conceptualize the mental map, the internal model, so the client can recognize and revise this internally for a new level of mastery. This is what is a part of a transformation of identity, the bedrock of the model of how and who they are. If someone diverts to an old feeling or behavior, look at reframing and redirecting now, not waiting six paragraphs into it. Remember, the power is in the focus, and that permanent change arises from the consistency of that focus, mind, brain, behavior. Knowledge conveyed passively is inert. Knowledge generated through insight changes the mind and brain. And finally, conceptualize the meta map with the client in order to master and internalize the process. That may be including identity. This helps create an outline to incorporate new experiences into a new framework, the context of here and now as part of the storyline of an evolving identity. So, as we close, here are a couple of my predictions, since you ask. Going forward, we will develop ways of recognizing and understanding synchronicities, individual and collective energy fields, and a couple of phenomena which are part of our experience and universe that in the tomorrows ahead, we will evolve concepts and descriptive systems for. We'll develop words and a language, a nomenclature for things that we can only sense right now, individual and collective energy fields, stemming from Einstein's unified field theory of human energy. In fact, the magician, Harry Houdini, reminded us, just because something's unexplained doesn't mean it's supernatural. And finally, my final quote, I promise you, unless we talk about it, from Garrison Keillor, be well, be happy, and go out and do good works. Now, it's been my privilege and pleasure to discuss these notions with you in these four seminars. I deeply appreciate all the input, the kind words. I hope we'll have additional opportunity to collaborate. So hang around, and I'm interested in your thoughts, input, questions. And we're in discussion mode to do that. So let's talk. What would you like to talk additionally about or to revisit?
David, this is Brad Swanson again. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Always so much to think about.
Are you clear? Are you a little clearer now than you were a little while ago?
Well, you know, it's hard because, no, I will reflect on what you've given me as a means of kind of wrestling down the question I asked. But it sounded – we have one more seminar to go, right?
No, this is our four. We were four and out, and this is our fourth. They're all recorded. This one will be posted tomorrow, so they'll be available for a while if there are any you want to review and reflect on the outline to get you oriented. And although I didn't always stick to the outline because I wanted to incorporate discussion of the questions and input, it sort of roughly follows the outline, the topics and the essence is there. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, no, just thank you. There's so much to think about and integrate. I appreciate how you have given us ways to use the theory and observations as, you know, in direct coaching interventions. So that's been particularly helpful. Thank you for that.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm glad it was helpful. Let me hear from you. Questions, thoughts, discussion. What would be most helpful to talk about?
Dave.
Yep.
David here from San Augustine. Going back to the very beginning about how, and you've referred to it often, how do I get inside their circle? What are some things that you do in those first few minutes as you attempt to listen and then get in that circle?
Okay, the first thing from the idea of having a model of developing a coaching story and asking what you'd like to focus on and where would you like to get to, maybe after, if it's an ongoing, to bring me up to date, give me a progress note, meaning will you tell us about, will you talk about what you did in terms of your commitment at the end? So someone begins with a specific focus. Now, the first thing I'll do is listen for their experience. If they're excited, upset, whatever the range of experience is. Remember we talked about state always comes first, then strategy and story. If someone is excited about what they've done, I hear that. I'm excited for them. I hear your excitement about that. Now, let me give you so I'll resonate simply first with their experience, often with what they're reporting that they've done, how glad they are, and congratulations. That's exciting to do that. So now let's consider the opposite. Someone has there are two instances I vividly recall of someone who just before the call to me for our coaching session had something really, really upsetting happen to them, each in their own way. And they called, they kept the time to say, I had this happen and I'm just so upset, I think I need to reschedule. So, I'll say, I hear how upsetting that was. Would you like to spend just a minute or two doing a brief relaxation before we reschedule? I want to honor their request, but I want to offer something. And for one, I offered a progressive relaxation. The other, we did a minute of mindfulness meditation. With each of them, after that minute or minute and a half, they were able to get grounded and centered and moved into a very meaningful and productive session. Now, I would contend the most important part of that session happened in that first minute and a half because they created with me and internalized a process of what they could do themselves when I'm nowhere on the horizon of how they can regulate and get grounded and centered. That little system, that little 1 or 2 minute mindfulness meditation, that progressive relaxation, and they said later that was so vivid, and I use that, and sometimes we'll develop it more as a process, but those are examples of first resonating with an experience. That's how you get in the circle. That's how you can get together with someone for a common ground to then go someplace new together.
Very good. Very good.
Answer your okay. Yeah, and I think you're pointing that out and focusing on that is really important. It's so fundamental because this is part of what happens that's so important while you're talking about other things, because this is what they're going to internalize, and this is the self-regulation that we've elevated to become at times a more systematic way of addressing things. And it becomes more important than the content often. Yeah, so thanks, David. What else? Who else?
Dave, it's Kathy Hart. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. So just go over some of those techniques you would use for that relaxation time?
Let me give you an example, because I think it's an example of the power of focus, and this is a fundamental tool that we use collaboratively with a client, because our first question often is, what would you like us to focus on today? Now, a client may not be accustomed to asking that question when they sit down to do something, but began with, as we all do, a free association or a bunch of things. And doing that consistently will help a client ask that question of himself or herself, but to do a focus. If they have difficulty with a focus or look at something in a broad or abstract way, what aspect would you like us to focus on to get some traction? Now, I say that as preface to the example that you asked for. An example of focus is mindfulness meditation.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do with a client is ask the client, let's do it right now. Each of you, let me do the mute here. One second. Okay, you don't have to worry about sound. What I'd like you to do is to get very relaxed and be aware of how firmly, securely your seat is holding you. Relax your body and focus just on your breathing. Be aware of breathing in relaxation and breathing out any tension. Focus just on your breathing. As you do this, there will be a thought that will come into your mind inevitably. And this will happen when you're alone and doing it later. Let that thought go. Let it float away. Don't engage it. And use it as a cue to refocus on your breathing, the in and out of your breathing, breathing in relaxation, breathing out tension. A thought occurs, let it go, don't engage it. That's your brain doing its job description. But for this, you're letting it go. And you're aware of the relaxation in your body, throughout your body, as you focus just on your breathing and nothing else than your breathing. This is something you can return to. This is something when you want to go to sleep more effectively. It's just simply a model of focus. So now let's move from this experience. You sit down at your desk and you're going to write, or you're going to compose a memo, or you're going to focus on something that you're going to do today. That same focus is what you align your attention to. And anything else, you don't pay attention to until you do that task, that specific focus, then you move to the next thing. Does that, we're in conversation mode now. Does that make sense? Is that an illustration that's helpful?
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Every coaching session is some extrapolation of that, because we ask a client, what would you like to focus on? There are millions of things that are possible. This is not a normal conversation. We are hardwired in our attachment and conversational and emotional and cognitive patterns to free associate, you know, to speak in paragraphs. It's unnatural for a coach to compress things into 10 to 12 words and stop. It's unnatural for a client not to take off with paragraphs, but they come to see the benefit of perhaps being interrupted to say, can you put that into a sentence to capture that so that we can focus together on what you want to do? In other words, how they're hardwired and how we're hardwired, that is not going to be productive, because that's going to be what every social conversation is. We talk in paragraphs, we wait until somebody catches their breath, we talk, you know, and think about it. You know, and this revisits the concept that what we know is that we attend to and retain up to 10 to 12 words at a time. After that, we lose cognitive reserve, we lose attention. If somebody talks in long paragraphs, begin to plan what you're going to have for dinner that night. Think about when you've been to a presentation. Somebody does not keep the burden of clarity, himself or herself, and too many words, you're planning what you have for dinner that night. So this is what we're doing in coaching, to ask, and I'll ask, some of you are victims of this, that I will ask a coach to listen to the recording in the training of their coaching session, pause right before they comment to their client, and write down, in no more than 12 words, a single, clear, brief, specific sentence. Then listen to what you said and just compare the two. See what you think would be most effective. So that's a good question, and I hope that, you know, provides some clarity, because this is part of what we do, is to help somebody focus and systematically develop a way to proceed with self-reflection, with greater objectivity and subjectivity, but with their experience as point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, did that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you very much. It sure does.
Yeah,
thank
great
you.
Great question. Yeah, thanks. In your legal work, you're probably familiar with this, and can think about how effective it is when people are clear, brief, simple, and precise. And this is what we want to do as coaches.
Right.
Other thoughts, other things that would be helpful to talk about? Okay, I want to ask you guys a question. And I'll tell you the backstory after we do the question. I want to ask you a question, and I want you to write down the first word or phrase that comes to mind. Don't think about it. Just immediately write down what your response is. What is your unlived life? I'll tell you the backstory. The reason is we often respond immediately at an emotional level, from the midbrain level, before we move whatever we're thinking about or how we process it to our left prefrontal cortex, where intellect and reason and all that come into play, and we always find a reason whether it fits or not. But this is an emotional. Look at your response, because that comes from your midbrain. That's probably truer than if you had 10 minutes to think about it. Here's the backstory of where I used that first. I did a retreat with a buddy at a ranch in Texas of executives who were CEOs of companies or owners of their business and were within a year of retirement. They knew that it was called What's Next Exec. They knew that they weren't going to be pleased more than a couple of months with playing golf. So they knew they needed to plan a next career or a next contribution or something. So they were ready to look at this. And we did a 2.5-day retreat. And this is one of the beginning question of one of the sessions that I asked them. I said, like, just exactly like I did each of you just now. in the first two retreat series, over half of the people came to me at breaks or at lunch saying, at the end of the series, saying, of everything that happened, that was the one thing that caused me to think more than anything that happened in this entire 2.5 days. These people who were the epitome of success in every worldly way, I didn't think it would be that significant. I thought, you know, well, they've done it. It set them into a course of thinking and reflecting of what they had missed or not done or planned. And it set up some very different ways of thinking about moving ahead. And I haven't responded to two or three of those of you who have asked about any related white papers or any other material. I'm going to send you guys a link. There's a series. It's a collection of white papers that I did essentially for coaches and then revised it to make it a little more literate. It's a book called Engaging the Ineffable. And it's toward mindfulness. Anyhow, I'll send you a link because it was written mostly with coaches in mind. If you want to take a look at it, see if it grabs you. It's like 21 different chapters, and each one has a title of one word. This one chapter is called Unlived, and it's this story and some other related things. So I'll send you that. And I apologize for not responding to those of you earlier, but this is kind of a compilation that might be of interest to you. Other thoughts or other things that would be helpful for us to talk about? We still have a few minutes, or can take a few minutes, if you'd like to talk about anything that we haven't so far, or revisit anything that didn't make sense at the time. If not, we'll wrap up. Any final call, questions, comments? Well, I really appreciate and value our collaboration. I wished it would be more seminar related, but there's so much, or more similar seminar format, but there's so much information I wanted to convey and give you that I had to sort of usurp that and do it more as presentation. I value the interaction and the discussion way more because I know what I'm going to say, and I even agree with most of it. But this has been very valuable to me, and I deeply appreciate your input and interaction in the emails and at the time of our presentations today, especially. So thanks very much. I hope I can be of some help to you in the future in some way. If I can, let me know. I'll be eager to hear what you guys are up to. If you have any other thoughts or questions about any aspect of this, fire off an email. You've got my email address. Thanks very, very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dave. It's been so valuable.
Thanks so much. See you guys. Take good care of yourselves.
You too. Happy holidays.
Thanks.